He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive
my car. This is Jada Markin with Car Keys, and I will be discussing a few topics with Mike Flint this morning. Robin Leach, my co-host, is not available today. So a few things I would like to talk about is, first of all, the market, the car market in general, and the outlook for 2024 after a pretty robust 2023 is looking like a slow increase in overall sales. Things have gotten pretty much back to normal after the pandemic. New inventory is back up to 3 million cars. And, I thought that what we experienced through the pandemic with dealerships with very few cars was going to help us change the sales model for new cars in this country. But I was totally wrong. And we're back to doing the things we have always done when it comes to selling and buying cars. A lot of new cars coming on the market. One in particular that I'm curious to see is the new Porsche Macan. It is a Porsche's small SUV or smaller SUV. It's still classified as a compact SUV, and the Macan has been a great vehicle in the Porsche lineup. It has been great for Porsche because 80% of the Macan customers are new to the brand. So it's a big thing for Porsche to go all electric on this car, and they are coming out with a new platform for this vehicle that they will be using for a bunch of new cars and SUVs. Like all electric cars, it will be faster than it needs to be, and prices will start in the $80,000 range for the standard, just under 400 horsepower version, and just above $100,000 for the close to or over 600 horsepower version. That really, you know, brings me to think, reflect a little bit on the horsepower of all these cars, and a lot of that is just unnecessary.
What kind of range do you think it's going to, or do they say it's going
to
have?
Well, interestingly, I had to scroll down to find the information on range, and which is always, you know, the hot topic when it comes to electric vehicles.
Yeah, because it's hard to pin an electric vehicle for range because so many things, as I know you guys have talked about before, impact that battery and how it is used. And especially like we've seen over the last couple of weeks in other parts of the country, very, very, very cold tends to take the battery and start draining it.
True. And Porsche is announcing a range of 500 kilometers, which is about 300 miles.
300 miles, okay.
One of the magazines at Tesla, I can't remember if it was the Car and Driver or Motor Trend. I'm not sure, actually. It doesn't really matter. But they got a practical range of 290 miles with this car. So it's in the norm of you know, what's being accomplished by electric cars these days. And, you know, we keep bringing range up, but the reality is range is increasing a little bit every year. Mercedes has just increased the ranges on their electric vehicles, on their EQS model, so high-end sedans and SUVs. Not by much, but by 10 or 20 miles. And so they're above the 300-mile range, which, you know, is like a lot of gas cars.
Yeah, it's
I
hard
drive a diesel that gets 700 miles on a tank.
There
which,
you go.
You know, makes me very picky when I get into any other car. You know, I'm like, oh, you only have 400 miles? This is terrible.
Yeah, no, it's just difficult to project on the electrics. They keep changing, and I've seen a lot of people review and say that generally they found that you can deduct 10 to 15% off what they're telling you as far as the car is range is going to be. But again, all the different factors that control that, there's a lot of variables there.
Yeah, and we talk about the cold weather and the fact that the range goes way down, but, you know, the reality is, you know, you take your gas-powered car and your miles per gallon, which, you know, is the other measure of range, the miles per gallon go way down in the winter driving as well. I mean, you're not, you know, I get my Subaru out and I get 22 miles to the gallon instead of getting close to 30 when driving in the cold. So,
yeah,
I think it's
and road conditions too. If you're driving on slushy roads, it doesn't matter which car you're driving, it's going to have to push harder. So it's going to use more of the particular fuel it has.
Correct.
You had something interesting on the agenda this morning that fascinates me, and that's where to buy used cars. Because I tend to, my wife has a newer car because she works in such a, she works and has to travel a lot around the area. And, of course, when you travel around here, it doesn't take much to put on, you know, 100, 150 miles a day. But I'm a used car person, and I have been buying my used cars, believe it or not, off of Facebook.
You know, I bought my last car off of Facebook, and granted, it's a little toy car, and it was kind of a impulse buy, if anything. But I think Facebook is a decent place to look for cars. I think the more traditional venues are either you go to your local car guy or you know somebody who's selling a car. I mean, those are ideal situations, really. But there are the main websites like Car Gurus, Auto Trader, Edmunds, Kelly Blue Book. Those are the resources that I use to look for cars. I can tell you of one or two that you can't use anymore. Vroom is one, and we all remember seeing ads for Vroom not so long ago on TV.
Yeah,
and they are totally done.
They're gone. Huh? When these places grow, it's just like any other thing. You start out, and there's a lot of startups, and they get weeded out, probably more so based on their service.
I think Carvana is struggling too. Carvana has run into for those of us those of the listeners who are not familiar with either Vroom or Carvana, they have or had similar business models, which is to sell cars online. So virtual stores, order the car online, do all the paperwork online, and the car gets delivered to you. Or in the case of Carvana, you could pick it up at one of their, what do they call them? They had some locations where they did stock cars.
Yeah, partners, I think they're calling them. They're partners.
But I think was detrimental to their model was that when the market for used cars during the pandemic and just after the pandemic, when the market for cars saw prices go way up 20-30% in 2020-21, Carvana and Vroom started buying cars. So they would make online offers and started buying cars back from people. And so people started selling their cars in Carvana.
Yeah.
And that's great, except the market kind of, if not tanked, kind of really slowed down. So now they're sitting on a bunch of cars that they can't sell or can't sell at a profit.
Put a slam on the brakes and a quick reverse. It's all over.
Yep.
Well, you know, so, it was like investing. You know, you're rolling the dice, really, because you can't necessarily predict how people are going to respond. And it's kind of the same thing as watching the sales of gasoline-powered cars, internal combustion engine compared to the electrics. All the same thing applies. You have to try and figure out what people are thinking next month.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't.
So I think, you know, back to your question, I think I used to look at Auto Trader a lot, and recently I found their site to be, sometimes a little bit glitchy. So I've been using Car Gurus a lot, and the way I proceed is just to say, hey, what kind of car am I looking for? You know, and I will do a national search before I start narrowing down to trying to find cars closer to home.
Yeah.
I also think it's worth being willing to travel to go get a car. A few years ago, I bought a Volkswagen Touareg, my diesel, and I bought it in Georgia. And you know, I knew exactly what I was looking for as far as a car. And this one was in outside of Atlanta, had never seen a winter, even though it was only a year old. It was a Southern car.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a good deal on it, flew down, drove it back.
And who'd you say this was through? Carvana?
No.
Oh, CarGurus.
At the time, I probably did a CarGurus or an auto trader search.
Now, when you're using those, do they back up with warranties?
Every vendor, the site is just a platform, and then it is just plain dealers or private sellers selling their vehicles.
Yeah, that's the Facebook uses that same platform too when you go on there, because there are dealers and such on the mm-hmm. Facebook platform. So you're just being hooked up with other people, and if there's going to be any promises of warranty or whatever down the road, that has to be directly with the person you are buying from.
Yes.
The site is not going to handle any of that.
Correct.
And now, because I think when you're buying brand new cars that way, it's probably a completely different level when you're buying online, in that you would have the warranties.
Well, you're buying a brand new car, you're buying factory warranties.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't matter. Actually, I remember it's almost 10 years ago now, I helped my daughter buy a Subaru, and we bought it in Long Island, and you know, the question was, well, you know, what about the warranty? And the dealer was like, yeah, well, the Subaru warranty is valid anywhere.
Anywhere. Okay.
And I said, oh yeah, just as long as you have it serviced at a Subaru dealership. And the sales guy told me at the time, he said, no, actually, if you have it serviced, as long as you keep records
of
the car being serviced, whether it's done at an official dealership or an OEM dealership, or done in any shop, or even if you did it yourself and kept some records, it does not void the warranty. But those are our new car warranties.
Yeah.
Something, and Robin and I have talked about this a lot. I personally think that the way to go, if you're spending some reasonable amount of money on a car, is going the CPO way, you know, certified pre-owned.
Yeah, I've seen those.
And usually the more expensive the car, or the more the car is a luxury car, like if it's a Porsche, Mercedes, BMW, or Audi, for instance, the discounts are pretty substantial relative to a brand new car. And you can buy a car that will be a year or a year and a half old with maybe 20,000 miles for 30% off, and still get a full-blown warranty up to 100,000 miles usually, and a warranty that exceeds what the manufacturer offers on a new car. So it still remains one great way to buy a semi-used car, if I can say that.
Yeah. Used car market too is reliant on the individuals and their price points as well, because a lot of times I know when we have purchased used, I'm looking for low price points, and if you're getting into a range, the Jeeps that I have purchased on Facebook over a period of time here, I've purchased two of them, and each one was bought for less than $2,000. And in both cases, I ran them without doing hardly anything to them, and ran them for 3.5 to 4 years.
Well, if you can buy a car for $2,000, that is pretty good. And if you could run it for 3 or 4 years,
that's right.
That's awesome.
Old
Wranglers?
I'm one of those, looking in the cheap. And even when we recently had to go out and do a car replacement and looking at secondhand through dealerships, I was price pointing at 10 or less. Because especially now, the interest rates on used cars, if you're buying that way, are a little bit high.
Well, and that's the great thing about these sites, you know, whether it's Auto Trader, Car Gurus, and I'm trying to think of the other ones, but they all pretty much share the same databases.
Yeah, they do. I've noticed, because I signed up for a few, and I'm still getting email. We found this car for you and that car for you. And,
oh yeah, I'm getting emails from 5 years ago from the same dealership.
Yeah, it's like I've bought my car now. So,
but you know, you put your price point in, and then you put a you know, you all the criteria are there. You know, how old the car, what the mileage, the maximum mileage. The type of car, SUV, two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive, the type of gas, and then it spurts out results. And yeah. What I do is I just put it on a national basis, and then I start getting more picky. And I'll bring the mileage down for a particular car, or I'll bring the price down and see, you know, I go from 200 cars available down to maybe 50 cars, and then 20 cars, and then 10. And then I try to compare and see, you know, what is the real market, and what is the price for a particular vehicle?
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we should move ahead here since we're taking a lot of time. I see that you were apparently looking at Consumer Reports on most and least reliable.
And I'm always a little hesitant to – I always shake my head when I'm looking at Consumer Reports. But – there is a trend, you know, and again, the predictions and the outcome is pretty much always the same, and I think it does say something about, you know, reliability.
Well, it's do they define the reliability? Is it?
Well, here's the problem. Not really.
Okay, you know, yeah.
they tell you that they use a bunch of criteria. And I'm sure it's done in a very scientific way as far as statistical, data. But I find it fun, you know, yes, certain brands are on top and repeatedly are on top. Toyota, a lot of the Honda, Japanese manufacturers tend to have a really high score when it comes to reliability.
Yeah,
surprisingly, Mercedes is at the bottom end. And you go,
really?
Well, this is a really good car.
But again, it depends on how you're defining that reliability. That's a broad term.
Well, and here's the issue, and you cannot confuse reliability with cost of ownership. I mean, there is a correlation, or there should be a correlation. But sometimes these reports, like this Consumer Report, has certain models of Subarus being very highly rated, like the Subaru Crosstrek, and then others not so much.
Yeah, because you can say...
And basically they're the same cars. A Subaru Crosstrek is basically the same car as an Impreza. Why would one be a lot more reliable than the other? I'm not quite sure. But it is indicative of certain problems that certain manufacturers have had. You know, on the bottom of the list, for instance, the Ford F-150 and even the gas model has been a problem for Ford in the last couple of years. I'm not sure why, and the report doesn't point to that, but it seems to be a fact. Manufacturers have had problems with their electric cars, and even Hyundai and Kia, which are notorious brands when it comes to reliability and cost of ownership, both their star electric cars, the Ioniq 5 and what is the Kia version, the EV6, are like middle of the road as far as reliability.
So I
think there's a lot of little problems, and I think little problems with the car can drag the
Yeah, well, yeah, that, and again, living in an area like the Northwest Corner where you rely on a car for just about everything, you know, nothing is walkable unless you live directly in a village. The reliability that you can go to work every day, and when your car breaks, most of the time you have to take it in and you lose it for a day or two waiting for repairs to be done.
Yep.
or waiting in line, because I've noticed that when we had some problems not long ago, then when you called the mechanics, they were a week or two out. And if you're working, going to work with the car, losing it for 2 weeks is difficult at the best.
Yeah, and not everybody has multiple cars.
Right, yeah.
Like Robin, you know, yeah. Not, well, I do too. So, I mean, it
and
is.
You as well, yeah.
Things. So I want to bring up a brighter note, something that maybe brought up a couple times. And you're talking about buying used cars. There is another website, and this is totally unrelated and much more of a fantasy land. Website called Bring a Trailer. This is the place to find classic cars, sports cars, specialty cars. I mean, they're all used cars, and it's an auction site. And it's pretty addictive.
Interesting.
Every morning I wait for the email that comes in at 8:12 a.m. every morning with about 80 to 100 cars that are going on sale that day.
Wow.
And, you know, right now I'm looking at a Porsche Speedster on the screen, and I don't know what the price is, but it'll go up. The fun part about it is if you are interested in cars, there you can learn a lot. It works as an auction site, but it also works like a social media site. So anybody can comment on the vehicles, and you have a lot of input on the vehicle, and you actually learn a lot about cars. So cars that you know, people will barge in and say, "Oh, I have the same car," or "I've worked on such a car," or "I know a shop that will do this or do that." So there's a lot of information. It's really great, and like I said, highly addictive. And no, I've never bought a car on Bring a Trailer.
They've got a lot of interesting vehicles there. Yeah,
a lot of interesting vehicles. If you've had time to type it in while we were talking,
some serious bidding. I'm looking at it now. Yeah, as I was talking, you pulled it up and said, "Wow, look at this." So. This isn't for the person who's looking for a family car.
Well, it depends what kind of money you're willing to spend on a family car.
Depends
there
on
are
what
some
you
really
do
cheap
to your
cars
family.
There, but it's an enthusiast site.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
And you know, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Interesting.
On a not so bright note, you know, we have a safety segment every week, and we try to give people tips on what to and what not to do. But I was also looking at statistics these past few days, and it's always sobering to see, 43,000 deaths a year on the roads in this country. And, of those, many are avoidable. And just to run some quick statistics, about 14% of these fatalities were on urban roads, so closer to cities, really. 14% also involved people 65 years or older. So, you know.
Okay.
Okay, make it what you will.
Right.
12.5% of these people are pedestrians, and now we're starting to look at something that I think is really avoidable. And I take a position here that is... not always popular, but I always say that, you know, knock on wood, really, but I will never get run over as a pedestrian. If you are a pedestrian, you may have the right of way. It does not mean, I always talk about crashes, not in who's right or wrong, or in the wrong or in the right, but was the crash avoidable or not? And I think in all these pedestrians, many of them could avoid getting run over.
Yes, I'll agree with that. It's
and again, I don't want to blame the victim, and this is not what we're doing. But you know, I think if we are going to share the road, we all have a responsibility to do our part and try to look ahead, see ahead, and share the road.
Yeah,
and that goes both ways.
Exactly.
And so more pedestrians than motorcyclists will get killed in a year. 17% also involve at least one large truck, which leads me to believe, and you see a lot of videos of that too, is crashes on highways that involve large trucks. It doesn't mean that the trucks are at fault. It just means that when a crash does involve a large truck, you know, somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah, and the car is going to take the bigger end of the hit, probably.
Most certainly, yeah. Yes.
No, it's, yeah, it's like, as you say, the pedestrians going back to that. You have to respect whether you have that right-of-way or not. You need to come up and stop at that and look both ways, whether you're in the car, whether you're the person walking, whether you're riding the bicycle.
Yep.
Because at the end of the day, you know, your idea that, oh, it's my right-of-way, when you get hit by how many tons of metal, who wins? It's just not in your favor at that point. How about distracted driving?
Distracted driving is one of the leading causes, too, and it's also like, I did not write the number down, but I know it's like in the 12, 15.
I'm sure it's up there because, you know, yeah. I have to tell you, when I am driving these days and the car has all these features, you have telephone that you can speak now without having to have it in your hands, which of course it's illegal to do it within your hands. But I find for myself, all the gadgetry and all the things going on distract my driving. So I won't do it. I basically make it a rule of thumb. When I drive, I'm driving. And to heck with the fancy monitor in the front, to heck with answering the phone calls, because I found myself when I was answering phone calls, I start losing my concept of what my primary function is, and that is to drive the car.
Yep.
And, you know, so I personally, you know, from my side, I don't like a lot of this crap in the cars, these big screens and anything anymore, especially when they're for the driver to be using and seeing in a lot of cases, because I just think it's a huge distraction.
It can be, and it takes, I think, it takes discipline, and it takes getting to know the systems. And we know I've complained about this before, and jumping from one car to another, it takes time learning the systems.
Right. So, what's the safety tip out of all of this?
I think you just mentioned it.
That's it.
That is it.
Pay attention.
Focus on the driving. Focus
respect
on what you're
the
doing.
The fact that everybody...
And be aware of other people on the road,
yep.
Even if you think you have the right of way.
That's right. Because usually, if you're especially a pedestrian, it doesn't matter your right of way. You're going to be the one that pays the biggest price on it.
That's correct.
Okay.
That was fun, Mike.
We will see you next week.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay.